Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I was surprised that this one happened, I'll be honest with you. You know, first of all, Nesson hates me. They don't want any other guys on. So Dave O'Brien had to, it seems like, for months, plead and beg for Nesson to allow him to come in. I've been real critical of O'Brien all year. Obviously, I've called him a dummy, a dope, a moron. He's a lousy announcer. He's, you know, married to the media guy. His voice is fake. His hair is fake. It's dyed. Everything you could say about the guy, I said of him. I figured O'Brien would never come on ever. I crossed him off the list. We tried a lot. It didn't happen. But give this guy credit. He came in, and I asked him everything as much as I could. O'Brien answered every question. We sat down. It was actually a lot of fun. I've always liked O'Brien as a guy. He's a good guy. Again, give him a lot of credit. Not a lot of other people in town would do this. O'Brien came in, answered all the questions, gave some good answers, a good spirited back and forth with the voice of the Red Sox, Dave O'Brien.
All right, let's finally end this controversy right now, Dave. Let's get it out of the way. Which hair dye product do you use? How long have you been using it for?
All right.
It's dripping right now. I can see it on your jacket.
I got to jump you on this right now because I'm 5'9".
Right.
I'm 53.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot going.
Okay.
I could take you up back right now on horse and kick your ass.
Well, join the club, by the way.
That's the only thing. I got that going, and I got my hair.
Because Siglione could kick my ass. There's a long line of people. Vin Scully could beat me right now.
He talks about it. Right.
I'm sure he does.
Honest to God.
Yes.
And I don't know how to prove this
right,
other than
come here.
I will. Come
let me
here.
See. I'm going to run my hands through it.
Go ahead. There's gel in it. You know there's gel in it.
Yeah, there's some product.
Because it's got to stick up a little bit.
Sure.
But I swear to God, and I know you've said this on the air about me, that he's got to stop dying his hair. If you think that I'm dying my hair after today, I have not done my job by being here. I'm sitting here
face-to-face.
That's
why you came here.
The biggest reason I came here is because...
Because you're a vain TV guy.
I'm a vain TV guy. I got a lot more hair than you do, by the way.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
But I mean, if my neighbors are saying, hey, do you dye your hair like
Kirk says? Is that what's going on?
Well, one of them did.
That's all it takes, right?
And I'm like, come on, I don't dye my hair. I mean, I put a little gel in it. It looks darker. But now that you're sitting here, I hate to begin a conversation this way because it does sound vain. You're right.
It's okay.
But when you're looking at me, do you really think I put crap in my hair?
Well, you just said you put stuff in your hair.
Well, I put gel in it.
So if you're doing gel, why not the natural next step? I'll believe you.
Because I don't have to.
You're a nice guy, and you swore to God, and I think you're a religious guy, right?
A little bit. Yeah, I go to church.
So if you're going to swear to God, I'm going to believe you. But I'll ask you this, as a TV guy,
yeah.
If it started going gray, are you vain enough that you would do the paint? Because I think men should not dye their hair.
I agree.
I don't think. So you would go. You'd be all in.
I agree. Now, you see a little bit of gray coming in on my temples, right? Tiny bit.
You're very worried. Are you going to show me all the hair on your body?
This is
not where I thought this was going to go.
Neither did I. Believe yes. me. I was kind of hoping it would.
Right.
No, I'm going to tell you right now that if you go gray, let it go.
Okay.
And my old man did, but my old man had his hair black, jet black, until he was like 60.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that happened.
Okay.
I inherited the one thing from my dad was 6'2". I didn't get any of that.
Right.
The one thing I got was a pretty good head of hair.
All right.
And it's my color. Never put anything in it. And to your point, I never will.
Okay. So I'm going to believe you on
okay.
that one.
Right.
We'll move on from the hair thing.
Good, good, good.
We chase people all the time to come on this podcast. I know you'll find this hard to believe. A lot of people don't want to come on with me to do this podcast. I give you all the credit in the world. A or Nesson, I know they hate me. You decided to come on here, and you actually, we initially asked to do it. You said no, but then you came back at Ben Kitchen, my producer, a couple weeks ago, said you wanted to come back on. What changed?
Well, I've been wanting to do it all year, actually.
Yeah.
I wanted to do it in the spring because I felt like there were probably some things that I should address.
Yeah.
You know how this business works. It's not always your decision.
True.
I think there was some sensitivity about the controversy of the play-by-play switch that rubbed some people raw. They didn't want to talk about it. They wanted to get into the season. I was allowed to be talked into it. I wish between you and I that back in the spring I had said, let's do it, because I've never turned down an interview in my life.
Right.
And there's no reason for me to
do
that.
Did you turn down more stuff than just me in the spring?
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff?
Yeah, there was a lot of conversation about, hey, don't do that, don't do that. I don't want to get all into that because now it feels like ancient history.
Well, we'll get there a little bit.
But what I wanted was to be able to sit down and talk about a lot of these things because I think now it's probably ancient history that a lot of people don't care. But
you'd be surprised.
But I've gone through an entire season as the television voice of the Red Sox.
Sure.
You either like it or you don't, or you still have an opinion or whatever. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I get that. But over time, I feel like it'll settle in and feel more normal to everybody. But at that time, back in the spring, it wasn't feeling normal to a lot of people.
If you could do it again, do it all over again, would you have done that? What I thought was, because you're, listen, you're a well-credentialed man. You know, you've done Red Sox on the radio forever, national stuff on the radio, women's Final Four. Would you have done that thing at the start of the year in Nesson where you kind of went on the air and gave your credentials and your resume? Yeah. It just seemed to me an odd choice.
Odd choice.
No? Everybody know. Don't you think people know who you are? You made it sound like you're some guy coming from, you know, like
I was told by a
Cheyenne.
I was told by a TV executive, people don't know who you are here.
There's a Nesson executive?
I'm not going to tell you who it was, but it was somebody who sat me down and said, in this market, they know you on radio.
Right. But you did ESPN.
ESPN for 16 years.
Right.
I felt like when I heard that, I felt like, wow.
Did you believe it?
I guess I did.
I guess
I felt, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Monday Night Baseball
sure.
for years and years.
Yeah.
Well, Red Sox fans are not watching that much Monday Night. If the club is off, they're not watching. If the club is playing, they're watching the Red Sox. You probably know I do a lot of college basketball.
Yeah, no, nobody's watching. I mean, statistically, no one's watching that here.
Not here.
But people are in their cars listening to the – how many years did you do Red Sox radio?
Nine.
Eight, nine. So yeah. I would say most of the Red Sox fans watching on Nesson listen to you over those 9 years.
So you think it was a mistake to go on the air and say, look, for those of you who don't know
– It just felt like – it felt minor league. It felt beneath you.
It did.
It felt like, hey, I'm Dave O'Brien.
You weren't alone. There were people who reached out to me who said the same
thing. Hey, come watch me. Like, I'm like, we know who you are. You did a great job on the radio. Don't do that.
It was honestly –
I felt like you did – to me, it felt like not quite a hostage video, but it felt like you didn't want to do it.
Ah, because I did want to do it.
You did. So, okay. That's interesting.
So I felt like I had come to – I thought about this all winter about how am I going to come on the air after everything that happened. And with some sensitivity and try and present, you know, at least a basic resume of who I am. Maybe in retrospect, hearing what you say, maybe it wasn't the proper thing to do. I didn't think it offended anybody.
I don't think it changed
anyone's opinion of what – I mean, you make up your own mind whether this guy's any good or not.
Well, that's different, yeah.
But I think that in that case, given the opportunity to do it again, maybe I wouldn't do it again. Maybe to your point – I didn't feel like everybody knew, hey, I'm a local guy.
Right.
I was born and raised here. I grew up a Sox fan coming to Fenway Park. I've called the World Series 8 or 9 times, all that stuff. And maybe I needed to show, hey, I'm credible to have this gig.
Did you feel like – and one of my other criticisms, I criticized you a lot during the year. I'll admit it. You know, we're here face-to-face. I thought you were really good in the radio. I thought this first year, it seemed to me – and you could tell me where I'm wrong. It seemed to me like you never – quite got comfortable calling the games. It felt like you were not really sure. It seemed like you were just a little defensive is not the right word, a little timid at times this year. Maybe that's because you had to work with 76 different guys during the games. I don't know.
That is part of it.
It felt like you just couldn't quite. And maybe next year I'm sure it'd be much better. And when I argued this with Jerry, and most listeners and callers, by the way, have your back. Most of them say, well, you know, Remy's never sounded better, which I agree. I thought Remy had a good year, so I guess you have to get some credit for that. But did you feel uncomfortable all year, or am I overthinking it?
Not all year. I think at the beginning of the season, I felt like I'm working with 3 different partners.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working for a brand new network. I'm working in a position I haven't been in before.
A brand new network for you.
Brand new network for me.
Yeah.
And you know as well as I do, when you're working for a brand new entity, they want you to do things one way.
Sure.
You may have a skill set that's something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a work in progress. It evolves over time. I thought as the year went on, I did get more comfortable with the position. I'm not going to say right off the bat I was. But I think if you drew a conclusion on me in April and May, that wasn't accurate in July, August, and September. So I got more comfortable with working with Dennis Eckersley here on a Tuesday, Jerry Remy on a Monday, and then Steve Lyons for a 9-game West Coast swing as the season went along. But I would say it took a little time for me, and I think it would have for any announcer.
Right. Well, when I'm watching the games on Nesson, you know, there were nights I knew you'd be there. I knew the color guy was going to be, and that seemed to me to be strange. I'd like to know. I'd like to get some idea. Did it seem? Behind the scenes, was it as sort of, was the disconnect as strong? Did you know who's going to be announcing with you a week from Thursday, say?
No, not all the time.
No?
No. And I think they put out a schedule, an internal schedule at some point, and I can't say I read, you know, through to the end of August,
right,
whether or not.
No, I know, but did you
Lions
know it's
going to be there?
Do you know it's working the next series all the time?
Generally, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, baseball's like this. It's 162 games. It feels like a siege sometimes.
Yeah.
As much as I love it, love being there, it's every single night you're there. By the I get there at 2:30 in the afternoon, sometimes leave at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it works, and you're prepping before you ever go to the ballpark. It's all day. You feel like you've put in 17 hours. You're not really concentrating on, well, you know, July 1st, I've got Dennis Eckersley for three games.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And to me, it's not that material until the guy gets in the booth. And then, yeah, things do change. Eck looks at the game a lot differently than Jerry does. Lyons approaches the game far. His cadence is different.
Mm-hmm.
His approach to how he sees a mistake made is different than the other two guys. So I think that's the area that I had to adapt to. And I tried to make – I mean, I go into every game hoping I can make my analyst better. I really do look at that as a huge part of what I do, trying to bring out the best in them. And I appreciate what you say about Jerry Remy and giving me some credit for that, because Jerry does. Jerry came into the season looking to prove some things, and I thought he knocked it out of the ballpark.
He had a good, I thought he had a really good year.
I thought he had a great year.
But I do get the sense, and I've heard this from people, that Nesson, in a way, is trying to sort of push him out, push him aside. Do you get – I mean, what – if it's up to Remy, I'm guessing he'd work more than he's working.
Yes,
right?
I think that's true, and I think you're likely to see that.
You think he'll do more games next year?
I think based on what he did this year, and look, this he's going to be 30 years in.
Right,
I don't think he honestly has to, but my point is
he's proven himself
in this market. He's become an iconic analyst. I think he had a great year at the microphone. I think he's probably put himself in a position to do this for many more years to come. I don't know what the thought process is, because no one shared any of that with me, but Jerry has, and I know Jerry would like to be at the microphone for several years to come. I'd love to see that.
Well, we were just talking before we got on the air, and I was complaining about a meeting I had with the dopes in management, right? These idiots who try and, you know, some are smart, some aren't. It was a frustrating meeting. And sometimes I want to say to these guys, I understand you do this, and this is your job, but we're in there every day. We know what works and doesn't work. You said management didn't talk to you at all during the year about that. Doesn't that drive you crazy sometimes? Don't you want to say to them, I know, listen, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. I'm not saying that my answer is the be-all, end-all, but can you ask me? Can I have a voice?
Sure, I think we all feel that way. I think that if we all get in a room and talk about it, it's always better. And if everybody listens to the guys in the booth at the microphone, we're all going to be better off. Of course I feel that way. I've got an ego just like you do. But
you have an ego just like mine?
Maybe not like yours.
Okay.
Maybe half of yours.
Okay, well, it's
but look,
still
if
a lot.
If you're going to do this job,
right,
you better have a strong opinion of your ability.
Yes,
and
a thick skin.
And a thick skin. You've got to have that too. And I think that, and especially in Boston,
no doubt.
That really goes with the territory. And you know as well as I do, that's not just announcers. Certainly not. It's ball players first and foremost,
mm-hmm.
athletes, general managers, coaches. I don't put myself on that level with those people. I think we're commenting on what they do.
Right.
We're analyzing what they do, but we're somewhere in there, somewhere in that stratosphere. But
did you the other criticism I laid on you a lot more, and Jerry really had your back all year. I don't know how much you listen. You probably don't listen that much. But we would play some sounds where I thought it was a little, and I understand you guys are the home announcers. The homer angle to me got a little strong as the year went on.
Really?
Do you get pressure from Nesson or the Red Sox ever? Do they give you any notes? Don't be critical. Don't say this. Don't say that.
Absolutely not.
Because we did play a cut of you saying how much you like hugging Xander Bogaerts at the end of the year.
Oh, well, I mean, he's a great kid.
Yeah.
He's a great. But if that's a homer, I mean, what was Johnny Most to you?
Total homer. But I was 9 years old. I was 11 years old. I wasn't 40 years old.
Hawk Harrelson's a great guy. What about Hawk Harrelson?
I don't think he's a great announcer, though. That should not be your model.
Nor is it. But I'm saying if you call someone a homer,
right? Well, Mike Gorman. I had Mike Gorman on. He said, "I'm a homer, Kirk. I'm a homer." I said, you know, when I listen to it sometimes, and he said, "Well, that's kind of part of my job. We're the home team. We're not. You know, when you do a Monday night game for ESPN, obviously it's different than when you're doing Red Sox, White Sox for Nesson, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you watching the game rooting for the Red Sox to win?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so then you're...
I want the Red Sox to
win. So,
but,
I mean, you know, so then I guess you'd have to say you're a homer to some extent, right?
But to me, what I think it's the difference in what we call that and how we identify that.
Go ahead.
A homer uses us, we, good guys, bad guys, openly sugarcoats events that occur in the game to shade for the home team. I don't do that. I will never do that. I feel I'm far more candid than you're giving me credit for.
Okay, well, give me an example.
In that sense. Well, I thought I was one of the first ones to call out David Price for underperformance.
Right.
I thought that there were a couple of times I walked into that clubhouse and I had face-to-face meetings with players over things that I said on the air that they considered very critical.
Now, is it with a classic example where they didn't really get the full story? They heard from somebody else and it got lost in the middle or not?
A little bit. That always happens. That always happens. But I don't think that happens to somebody who is sugarcoating, who is homing for a ball club.
Were you critical of Farrell's in-game decisions?
Sure. There were times I absolutely
was.
How
was he with that?
Not great.
No?
At the end of the season, for example, David Price against the Yankees was allowed to start a seventh inning. I don't think he should have been allowed to start.
Right.
Said so on the air. Now, I don't know what time you go to bed.
I watch the games.
You watch all the games?
I don't watch every single game, but I watch that game.
Yeah. And you heard me say, hey, look, I don't think – this is a first guess, not a second guess.
Right.
You heard me say that.
I'm sure you said it. I don't recall, but I'm sure you said it. I mean, if you said it, you're not going to lie to me. I'm sure you said it.
You can go reel it back if you want. But the bottom line is, you know, if you're not hearing that, you're probably not hearing my candid nature on the air enough. But I think that's at odds with calling someone a homer. The one thing I would say is probably early in the season, I was really enthusiastic about the fact that this was a team
was actually good.
Actually a good ball club. The last 2 years, you know,
they
was
sucked,
very tough
right.
to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So probably, you know, when Hanley's off to such a good start, when David Ortiz is having the early, when Mookie Betts is having the Pedroia, Porcello, I could go on and on. I was probably real enthusiastic about that. Personally, as well as professionally. But then, if you look at how it finished up, Kirk, I mean, the club won the division.
Right, great year, regular season.
Betts could win.
He's going to win the MVP.
I don't know if he will. He might.
I think he probably will. Porcello could definitely win the Cy Young.
You know,
Ortiz had a great year.
So, when you, in retrospect, maybe I was on to something.
Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe.
In that sense. But, I mean, the way.
But, but nothing from Nesson. No John Henry, no Nesson, no nothing.
I swear to you on the souls of my kids that,
okay.
that nobody has ever, in any job I've ever had, this isn't the first one I've ever had.
Right.
I've worked for three other
Nobody's
ball clubs.
Ever given you a note, ever?
Notes in terms
well,
of...
Well, I'm saying in terms of, you know...
Direction on what to say.
Yes.
Absolutely not. And I would never accept that. Never accept that kind of... I mean, you want to talk about in your face and overboard, and I would never... I would back out of that room and run.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen. That never happened to me and has not happened. No one at Nesson has ever directed me on, don't be critical, say this, be more positive, roll more enthusiasm. Went not 1 second of that, and certainly nobody at the Red Sox. In fact, I would say that one of the reasons I'm in that position is because I have more of a reputation for being candid and being outspoken. And I don't know if you felt that way when I was on the radio, but
I've always felt that way.
I think I'm far more in line with a Sean McDonough style of broadcast, who's a great friend of mine, and I know you admire him tremendously.
Well, McDonough went on a Monday Night Football game and dumped on the product the other night. I mean, took a steaming dump on the product. I mean, would you do that?
I would have said that differently.
Yeah.
But Sean has a reputation for, you know, for being that way and for being outspoken.
Now, the argument is that's why he wasn't here anymore, you know, all those years ago.
I think it was more than that.
No, I know, but I'm saying that was one of the that seems to be one of the things, no?
Right.
No,
I think what he said the other night is laudable in that he went after the referees when there were like 19 flags in a really bad football
terrible
game. However, it's not the only reason ratings are down.
No, there's a million reasons. Yeah.
And you know, and Sean understands that. And I mean, he said a lot of courageous things on the air. I didn't think that was as big a deal as some other things that he has said. A lot of people are saying, well, oh my God, how can you say that? Where that's Sean.
Right.
Sean's gonna go after referees if they're doing a bad job, and I thought he was right in that case.
I get the sense that Remy wants to take my friend Alex Speer and throw him out of the booth literally during the game. It looks like that's the last place on earth Remy wants to be, is talking analytics with Alex Speer. True or false?
Boy, that's a great question. I've never asked him about that.
Oh, but come on. Come on. You do games with him. If Alex is coming in the next inning, if he likes you, say, oh, great, Alex is coming. If
he's
not,
quieter with Alex than I am.
Much.
I like talking to Alex because I learn something every time I do. I love having him in.
Yeah.
There have been a couple of times I held him over an extra half inning.
Right.
Maybe not everyone was.
Alex gets, he's a friend of mine. He gets wordy, though.
He gets wordy.
He can talk, which is not the worst thing we're doing TV, I know.
But it's great stuff.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. You always learn something you didn't know going in. I think that's one of the things that Remy does exceptionally well. And I think a lot of analysts, I've worked with about 200 analysts between ESPN and my other jobs and Nesson.
Who's the worst one you ever had?
Boy, the toughest guy I ever worked with was Mike Lansing.
Oh, the old yeah.
One game,
right?
And he knew when he walked out of the booth, his career
never doing it again.
His career was over
at
that point. Not a bad guy,
right?
But I'm like, boy, I felt like I carried 700 pounds on my shoulders for 4 hours.
Yeah,
you know.
Do you like all three of these guys?
I do. I mean, I like them because they're all different. They all give me something else.
Right.
It's not the easiest thing in the world to work with three guys who are as different. Steve and I had this conversation, and I'm not talking out of school, but somewhere in August, and I said, well, cadence-wise, where I need to come in to call a play, would you be happy doing it this way? We had that conversation, and it was a chemistry thing.
Right.
And I thought we ironed it out, and it got the last 9 or 10 games we worked together, I thought were excellent. But then, you know, I'm back working with someone else, and I have to reset how I call a game.
But if you're saying Remy's going to do more games next year, that's going to be at the expense of someone else. I'm going to assume it's not Eckersley, who everybody loves. Is it going to be Lyons?
I don't know. I honestly, no one's had that conversation with me.
Nobody talks to you about anything, huh? You just show up, leave, show up?
Yeah, pretty much.
Really?
Pretty much.
You're not a gossip guy?
I know that's, well, I do like to gossip.
I've heard that about you, by the way.
I do
my
like
sources have told me that. I'm not going to say it's Mutt, but I will not give away my sources. I'm not the kind of guy who
I
does
love
that.
Mutt. And
everybody
he,
loves Mutt.
He and I gossiped like two little schoolgirls the entire time that he was there, and I was there on the radio side.
Sure, sure.
And off and on the air, actually.
Right. But so you don't know it'll be, but Eck only wants to do so many games, right? That's what I hear all the
that's
time.
That's been my understanding, and he has expressed his he doesn't have a great desire to travel much,
right?
At this point in his career, he's earned that,
right?
So my guess is he, you know, but if somebody said to me tomorrow, somebody called me from Nesson and said X going to do more or less, I wouldn't be shocked by that. If somebody said Jerry's going to do 125 games, I wouldn't be shocked by that either.
And you're okay with that? You don't want a traditional booth?
I like it as traditional a booth as I can get. I'll be honest with you.
Would you prefer a three-man booth, or did you not like that?
It depends on the three men.
The guys who the Mets are good.
The Mets are really good, and I like how that booth worked.
I'm guessing you don't want Cal Ripken in the booth next year.
I've been watching some of the broadcasts, and I think Cal's pretty green.
Not a lot of energy.
A lot of energy.
Got to give me a little energy.
Yeah, a great player. You kind of expect a lot of great stuff.
You didn't get it.
And I wouldn't necessarily say that you're hearing that. Ron Darling, on the other
hand, good.
I think is superb.
But don't you find that sometimes, more often than not, it's the guys who aren't great who are the better analysts? The great players generally. I mean, listen, we've Magic Johnson, Jerry Rice, Emmitt Smith, Cal Ripken, Ray Lewis. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. Maybe because they didn't observe a lot. Maybe they didn't have to think a lot. I don't know. But generally, they're not great.
I think the guys who have to sit and watch are better.
Right. Like Remy. I mean, Remy was a good player, but, you know, he was not a great player.
Yeah.
Collinsworth was not a great, good player, not a great player.
I mean, those guys were above board.
Yeah,
those,
yeah.
They were really
not
immortals,
an
all-star team. And,
yeah, but I'm saying not immortals, though. Like, they had to work for it. That's why I think Lou Maloney is so good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. I think Lou's upside is phenomenal. Told him that years ago. One of the reasons we wanted him in in 13 for the postseason was he sees things that others don't see. Remy, for example, this year, talking about the catcher closing up the knees when he's given a sign so the runner at first base can't see it. Now, I guess I knew that. Or tap the umpire on the shin guard when the pitch was a fastball in so that he'll be aware of where it's coming at 98 miles on. Those are great little observations that I thought he made on a nightly basis that I don't remember sitting next to anyone hearing before. And I've done games with 100 guys.
Right.
So when you can come away with that, and that's kind of, I think, to your point on Ripken, you want to come away thinking, yeah, I didn't know that. I've watched a billion games, never heard that before. That's what you look for in a great analyst.
I've talked about this, and I'll be interested to hear what you say about this. I don't want anymore when I'm watching a baseball game. It just feels antiquated to me now. I don't want the traditional play-by-play analyst. I want more of a conversation during the game.
You want a talk show?
I want a talk show with the play-by-play element somehow thrown in. It just feels like I say this all the time. The only thing that really hasn't changed since 1930 in America is how a baseball game is called for some reason. I want it to be, and I think you can do it. I've heard you on talk shows. I've been on talk shows with you before. You can do that. You can go back and forth. I think Eckersley can do it. I know Remy can do it. Lions could probably do it. It doesn't have to. On May 12th in Minnesota, I don't need to know the 3-1 pitch. That's just, and maybe I'm in the minority of that, but I just feel like the way television is now, you need more of that. And the world, by the way, wouldn't end if you guys actually disagreed and had an argument on the air once in a while. That never happens.
Well,
I don't mean like, hey, he was out, he was safe argument. I'm talking an actual, real argument.
Yeah. Well, you are describing a talk show,
some marriage of the two. Some marriage of the two, I'm saying. I don't know if that's possible to do. Maybe it's not possible to do.
Boy, you know, you've got certain constraints in a broadcast that you don't have on a talk show.
You have a million reads you have to do, too, right?
Yeah. There's a lot. This is a busy broadcast for a lot of reasons.
Sure.
You want David Price. You want Craig Kimbrell. You want to pay these salaries. You know, part of it is funneled through the broadcast.
For sure.
I'm very much aware of that. But, I mean, I'll take that under consideration. I think that probably most fans do want to hear conversation and occasional disagreement. I'm not saying that didn't happen, by the way. I thought that we did have broadcasts where we disagreed about not about the designated hitter, but it might be about what a player did in Los Angeles the night before, how an umpire reacted by ejecting a player, that sort of thing.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be all nuts and bolts. I get that about the game. But I do think fans, Kirk, tune in to hear the ball club play. They do tune in to hear the game.
I agree, but they want personality too, though. Well, you want both, but which I know that's what you're trying to do. There was a point, and I'm going to blank on this, and it's stupid. I took the note down. Eckersley was talking about his own alcohol addiction this year.
About Albert Bell.
Albert Bell. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me that you kind of weren't comfortable going into that. Is that a fair criticism or is that not true? You're just going on to something else.
Well,
we talked about it.
I know I'm the one who brought it up.
Okay. And it seemed like Eck started talking about it and then you kind of just went back to. Was that just a matter of something else is going on? You got to get to it? Or are you thinking, Jesus, this is sort of an area that I'm not comfortable during a game?
I think both. I think my memory of that is something was occurring, but also I didn't feel like the guy sitting in Newton watching tonight's game wants to hear necessarily about Dennis Eckersley's battle with alcohol.
Oh, see, I totally disagree because you're talking about a guy who watches the games night in, night out, hundreds of hours, and they love Eck.
Right.
And you're thinking, geez, you know, Eck never talks about this for 90 seconds or 2 minutes. That's way more interesting to me than that at bat.
Yeah, I thought we actually did talk about it for 90 seconds.
Maybe you did.
But I think what you're indicating is you'd like to hear that for the next three outs. Into the third inning.
No, you might be right. I understand that there has to be a balance. I understand that. I get that. But I'm thinking, oh my God, I've never heard this before. And I obviously knew about it.
But you had never heard about the Albert Bell part of it until I brought it up.
True, yeah. What was it? It was,
well, Albert Bell had approached Eck.
Eck
was still playing and thanked him for being so forthcoming about his own battle with alcoholism. That got out there because you know about it now.
Right.
That's the reason it got out there. But I think, you know, it's certainly worth considering, and the changing way people watch sports.
Well, that's the other thing, right?
Is something that I think, we probably have to absolutely pay attention to. And is that the way to go? Is it to – because I can do that. I can do that kind of broadcast too.
Right.
And might wind up doing a lot more of that.
So you guys get all the – how much – of an average game as the average fan watch? Like, we have listeners, they'll tune in for 7-8 minutes and they'll go to the other station, they'll come back and they, you know, do you guys, is it way less now than it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago? And is the median age troubling?
The median age in baseball has gotten pretty old. It's gotten older. Although it's funny, on the West Coast games, it goes way down.
Well, that makes sense, right?
People,
you got to stay awake.
Sure. But I think that what you might find interesting is how long people watch a game on NESN.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will hang in there for 45 minutes.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
Right.
It's time spent viewing. It's huge.
Right.
On this level.
And that's live people watching commercials live, which they don't do anymore.
Right. So I that part of it, and you know, the numbers were up about 28% this year because the club was so much better. But they also watched longer, and that was great to see. I think because this team scored runs, and you wanted to see David Ortiz next at bat.
Sure.
People hung in there. Hopefully, that'll be the case next year. It's going to determine a lot of things. But I think that the time spent viewing is really strong on most local regionals, most regional sports networks, when the club's good.
Right.
Otherwise, it's I'm catching the score. Even if they're out of the race, I'm gone. I'm going to watch Modern Family.
What's going on with my guy Streisky?
Streisky, the striker.
Streisky.
Yeah.
Why do I not see him? You know, it feels like he goes away and he comes and he goes. I'm sensing something's going on there.
Talented kid. He's a very, very talented kid.
He's in on the
kid.
Joke, which I like, too.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't pretend that he's something that he's not.
I think I like him a lot, really like working with him. I have no idea what anyone's schedule is. Garen Austin appears in games, obviously. She works really hard.
Dude, it just seems like you show up and people appear around you. You don't know what's going on.
It's, you know, it's kind of the way of it at where I am at this point.
But do you ever say, hey, I'm not saying you like Gary better than Garen or you like Eck better than Remy or whatever. Do you ever say, hey, just a heads up, we like him more than her or her more than him or this more than that?
I express my opinion, sure, privately. Yeah. Sure, I do.
You care to do it publicly, or
no?
Okay,
no, absolutely not. I mean,
no.
But what I'm telling when I'm telling you about the analysts I work with, I say that privately as well as publicly.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that of the three analysts, you have one you prefer more than the other two?
Well, the guy I work with the most is Jerry. Mm-hmm. And I felt like 100 games with Jerry, and the other two guys, Eck and Steve, split those games. I feel like. By the end of the season, we had gotten into a nice rhythm and a solid chemistry, and it was a work in progress. It evolved as the season went along. So, you know, I consider Jerry my partner.
Right. Yeah. Well, all right, we'll go back here. We have to. We talked about it so much. How did you feel Nesson handled the whole process, whatever it was, a year and a half ago? Was it that long ago?
Well, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish like a lot of people involved that it could have been done better,
right?
Differently, so that so many folks didn't feel awful.
Were you surprised at the outrage?
I was surprised, not at the outrage and the backlash. I was taken aback. I guess I was taken aback by some of the vitriolic response by some people, but there was part of me. This is going to sound weird. That was heartened by it because people
it was a passion,
of,
right?
Well, yeah, they kind of fall in love with a club and a broadcast team and all of that, and someone who's in your living room, by the way, does a hell of a job in Don Orsillo,
right?
And so some of the bitterness got me a little bit and caught me by surprise, but yeah, there was a heartening part of it too. Like, well, this is New England, this is Boston, this is the way it is here. You know, in a positive way.
Right. How icy was the relationship with you and Orsillo the end of that year?
You know, people are going to be surprised, and you may not believe this, but not at all.
Really? Because I was told this year in San Diego it was a little icy.
With
you and Orsillo.
Oh, no, no.
No, not at all? You still talk to him?
Sure.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Well,
I
don't talk to him every day. Yeah. I don't text him or anything
right.
like that.
But you get along with him.
I walked into Don's booth, and we shook hands, and we had a quick conversation. It was very cordial.
Mm-hmm.
Saw him after the game. It went just fine. I don't honestly think that people who have been in the business a long time look at that and go, what happened, as regrettable as it was, and I wish it had been handled different. I think everybody believes it should have been handled better and more positively. I still think Don understands the business. I understand the business. You know, you were on a television station. And then you were off a television station, and now you're back.
Right, and I'll be off again soon. I was on yours for a while, too, right.
You've had a huge change on your morning show.
True.
This is broadcasting.
Yeah.
It's kind of what we sign up for.
Sure, but but I think about it from your perspective. Last year, when this is going on, and it was by far, from the biggest Red Sox story of the year last year, A, they sucked, which really makes it a bigger story, right? I'm thinking of you, that final series where it's all Orsillo all the time. You must be thinking in the back of your head, oh, Jesus, I'm walking into this next year.
Sure. There's no question. It was a very, very, very tough period. It was harder for him.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get that
wrong. He landed on his feet, though.
But yeah, going through that was more. But it was really difficult to be around all of that and to realize, well, I'm walking into that next year. I wasn't coveting that. I'm really grateful that I'm in the spot that I'm in and that people wanted me to do this based on, you know, showing up, working hard, just putting forth my best effort. I thought, yeah, okay, if they want me to be in this position, I'm all for that. But the aftermath was really rough for everybody.
Were you surprised when they initially – I'm assuming they initially approached you. Were you surprised, given that Russillo had been there for a long time, people seemed to like him? Were you surprised or were you aware that things were going on?
I wasn't. I wasn't really aware that anything was going to happen. My contract was up.
Yep.
Don's was up at the same time. Mm-hmm. I was thinking I'm coming back to do radio.
Really?
That was my thought.
Where?
Here.
Oh, coming back to do it with Castiglione.
Sure.
I thought you meant like a talk show radio. Oh, I got you.
And
so you were prepared to re-sign and do that.
Sure, yeah. I was. Yeah, absolutely. And they wanted to go in a different way. And yeah, there was a moment where I was like, wow, boy, that's a surprise. But you know, you work your whole life, and you work your tail off, and you hope that people recognize if you're doing decent work,
mm-hmm.
and so that sort of followed. And you know, I've been on ESPN for 16 years, didn't just show up off the turnip truck yesterday. So I felt like, okay, that part of it maybe makes some sense, but the rest of it was very difficult.
And you hear, you know, I never really worked with Nesson. I never got a single note from Nesson. We were simulcast on Nesson for a while, and then we weren't. And you hear nightmare stories about Nesson from people who have worked there, from people who still work there. Are those, I'm not going to ask you if Nesson's a nightmare to work for, obviously, but do you recognize some of those thoughts? Is it a difficult place to work at times or no?
I don't go in except for an occasional meeting. They've been really good to me in the sense that they've allowed me to do my job and stayed out of the way,
mm-hmm.
which I appreciate.
Sure.
Because I think they're under the impression that if we hire someone who knows what they're doing, we're all good.
Right.
Everything will be fine. And I do believe that that's the case moving forward. I don't spend a lot of time there, and I pretty much, when I show up at the ballpark, either home or road, I'm in clubhouses and the batting cage and up mm-hmm. in the booth. That's where I am. So, you know, the drama that maybe you're describing, I'm not aware of.
No?
I'm not aware of that.
You never heard about it?
Obviously, I heard a lot of stories before I accepted the position.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And a lot of different things. But you hear that about almost any network.
That's true.
You know, I heard it before I signed on with ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it before I signed on with the network in Florida when I was doing mm-hmm. doing the Marlins back then, too. You hear it here.
Sure. I'm the reason for it here. I'm the one who says it the most. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
The other big debate, the final – well, two more questions. I'll let you get out of here. I think it's a fine call. No problem. But the David Ortiz call, historically, I'm going to say around here, especially like my friends like Bradford and Mutt, it was a good call. I'm not going to call it a great call. He said the guy's name three times.
Right. Right?
I mean, I'm not saying.
Well, I think more than that. I called the play. Yeah.
Yes, but I'm saying it's a good call. Did you have it scripted? Did what are you thinking? You're not like one of these guys like Randy, right? Was everything scripted out?
No. How do I script?
You're thinking Ortiz up right now. You're thinking, okay, if he gets a home run, I'm going to say this.
Well, that's. I mean, that isn't scripted. That's.
Well, it's pre whatever.
I swear to God.
Do you ever? You're doing. You have to preface it. I believe you.
Yeah.
You have to swear to God. And
not for one moment did I think anything other than came out of my mouth at the instant that I said.
Do you script things like? Do you think when the playoffs start, if the Red Sox win the World Series, I'm going to say this?
And when the Sox won the 13 World Series,
right.
I thought to myself, Boston Strong should be part of that call somewhere.
Sure.
So
sure.
I incorporated that.
That was a good call.
Didn't script it, said it, wanted
right.
to put it in there, wanted to get it right for history's sake. Look, you can have your opinion on anybody's spur-of-the-moment play-by-play call. That's
sure.
fine. You may love it. You may hate it. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Luckily, a lot of people liked it.
The people love it. They don't like it. They love it.
And I think that what I'm proud of with that call is it captured the tone and the spirit of the moment.
Right.
That's what I liked about it.
Well, for sure, if he doesn't hit that home run, they're home. They're not winning that series.
No
question. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So I'll hang my hat on that. If your critique of my call was it sounded scripted.
Not scripted. No. It was a fine call. But, you know, the problem is I get into arguments with guys like Bradford and Mutt, and then you got to take one side and the other side. I mean, it was a fine call. He said the guy's name three times. That's all. It was a good call.
Yeah.
It's a good call. Better than I would have done in that situation. I'll give you that.
Well, I mean, there's no way to predict. You can say, well, yeah, David Ortiz. What if he struck out?
True.
What if he dumped a single into left?
Right.
It's
right.
Nowhere near
the
coming out of your seat moment that it is. And my thought was, David Ortiz, he's done it again, basically. And instead of something as pedestrian as he's done it again,
right.
I wanted to try and go for a slightly different angle there. That's all.
Is this your real voice?
It's my real voice, yeah.
So when you're talking to the kids or you're talking to the, you know, you're going to get milk or something, this is the Dave O'Brien voice.
So I'm standing in a bank the other day in the bank line, which nobody does anymore.
Yeah, what are you doing in the bank?
And a woman in front of me turns and goes, are you, because I was on the cell phone.
Yeah.
And I just hung up the phone. That happens every once in a while, and that's how I know, you know, this is authentic. This is me. This is how I actually talk. Do you have a problem with this?
No, or? but it's like a radio guy voice. That's different than my voice. That's all. You've got a very nice, articulate, clean radio voice. And I wonder sometimes, you know, yeah, it's like the Ted Baxter thing, where you really talk like this in real life. That's all.
Well, I mean, I learned how to do this through years of being on radio.
Sure,
And then broadcasting school at Syracuse and all of that. You came a different way.
I sure did.
And you didn't come through. I'll give you a great story. Maybe you won't think it's great.
Go ahead.
I'm on a plane about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting and snoozing a little bit. We're about to take off. Somebody comes in front of me, sits down in the open seat next to me.
Right.
We take off, hit some turbulence. We're flying Seattle to L.A. I wake up. I start talking with this guy. And he's got a voice like nobody's I've ever heard before.
Right.
He's, you know, we're chatting about kids. He knows a lot about baseball. I'm like, how does he know all these guys in baseball? And I go, what do you do for a living? He goes, well, I'm a singer in a band. And I said, anybody I've heard of? And he went, well, the name of the band is Pearl Jam.
You know it was Vedder?
I did not know it was Ed Vedder
right. Sitting
next to me. And he had this voice from...
He's got a great voice, right.
But totally different from...
Oh, like, really?
Not a broadcast sound.
Oh, yeah. No, right.
You know, this great organic sort of sound to it. And the long and the short of the story is he takes his ticket when we land. We have this great conversation.
Yeah.
He writes, wherever you are in the world, anybody you want to send to come see us, call this number.
Really? Have you done that?
I sent like 15 people to go
and
see
him. And it's worth it? You've been able to
dig
on? Really?
Yes. He was the coolest guy in the world.
And he's buddies with Epstein.
Right. And a lot of people in baseball.
Yeah.
But I felt like a dope, obviously, afterwards. But he was wonderful because he was going to bury a friend in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And he said, this conversation has taken my mind off it. I thank you so much. Here's what I'll do for you.
Are you going to be one of these guys? You said you're 52. Is that what you said?
53.
53. Are you going to be one of these guys who's going to be doing it like when you're 85?
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. I think
as great as Vin Scully is, I got to admit, I maybe won't say this, is part of me that feels almost uncomfortable watching somebody that old working that much. Like it just, I know that's against what everybody else says, but it just feels almost like he's clearly not as good as he used to be.
89 years old, it's hard to argue that he's as good as he was 59.
And he's sitting there singing. It's just the whole thing seemed weird to me.
But
I don't know.
I mean, an amazing, incredible career. You've got to celebrate what he did.
One of the great – I know, but do I need him singing Wind Beneath My Wings for 6 minutes of the game?
Maybe not. But I will say, for me, the travel, the time away from home, all of that stuff, which, look, I'm not complaining. I love my job. Love calling baseball, college basketball. Can't wait to get started on that.
Yeah.
But
how many nights a week are you gone for that?
Boy, that could be 3, 4, 5. Depends on how many games.
That's a lot.
If it's a Saturday afternoon, you're in on a Friday.
Right.
You're going to see practice, and then you're calling the game on a Saturday. If you've got another game on Monday, you're traveling Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Call the game Monday. Hopefully you're home Tuesday.
If it hadn't worked out for you, so let's just say that last year, you know, EEI for some reason, it didn't go through, and Orsillo stayed at Nesson. Could you have gone to ESPN full time?
Well, I am at ESPN.
Would you have done increased work at ESPN?
Yes. Yeah.
And you've been okay with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's a little different than calling a game every night for 100. We did 156 games.
You get integrated with a team, and that becomes part of the bouncing around.
And I like that. I like the idea of being with a ball club. You know, when I was doing the games on radio, like 3 or 4 years in, one of the coaches for the Red Sox said, you know, we all thought you just did this as a hobby because you're on ESPN and you're doing all that. And I'm like, no, I love doing a game every night if I can.
Yeah.
Someone wants me to do it.
They also pay.
Yeah.
That helps. Yeah, it's not a hobby, but it's something you like to do.
It is. But, I mean, you're not going to – I'm not going to retire on it.
Right.
You know?
Well,
believe me, you're not going to retire on that.
Right.
So you'd better love it. It'd better be a passion for you. And, you know, I'm not saying I've got it licked. There's a lot of things – some of the things you've said today I've give me pause. But, honestly, I think that there's no better job. There's no better profession to be in if you love sports. And you do. And you know what a kick this is.
Sure. It's great. It's great, yeah, but, you know, I'm going to get fired eventually. You're not. That's the big difference.
You never know.
Oh, I'm going to give you credit. You only used the media guide 3 times during this interview. Congratulations.
What do you think of the hair, honestly?
I'm not sold yet, but you know, between swearing on your kids' lives and God, I think I have to go with you on that one.
You have to.
It makes me a little uncomfortable.
You have no choice.
Any criticisms or questions? You feel free.
Well, I mean,
because I'm sure you were, you know, we have mutual friends, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you do listen a little bit.
I catch you on occasion when I'm going to the airport.
Right.
I will say that. But otherwise, we're on different ends of the
day.
That's
true.
So I'm always reluctant to say anything.
You're hearing things secondhand.
I didn't want to pick up the phone and call you and say, Kirk, you busted me on my hair. Because
who'd you hear this from? Give me your sources.
Well, a neighbor, one of my neighbors.
Okay.
And then it went down the line to somebody.
Bradford?
No, I think I asked Bradford about it.
What did he say?
And he said, yeah, he says you dye your hair.
Right.
And I'm like, or he says, you don't have enough sizzle or you don't have this or whatever. And I'm like, wow, you know, how about somebody giving me a break here? You know, just got on the air 5 minutes ago at the job, and all of a sudden there's, you know, lack of chemistry and there's this. And I'm like, come on. I mean, really. But I understand you've got a job to do.
Right.
And I believe me, I respect your opinion, the fact that, you know, you speak your mind. I think mm-hmm. that's wonderful. It's what you have to do.
Fantastic.
It's what you have to do.
Right.
And I feel like I do that, too. I do it more than maybe you're giving me credit for.
You might be right.
But I hope that in the coming years, as I get more and more comfortable mm-hmm. with this role, that that'll become more evident.
Are you going to introduce yourself again next year and say, this is my second season with the Red
Sox?
I'll
never do it again after what you said to me today. No.
What do you mean? What town did you grow up in?
Born in Quincy.
Born in Quincy.
Grew up in Marshfield.
Okay.
On the South Shore, and then moved to New Hampshire for high school.
Right.
And then eventually college.
So who was your announcer guy growing up? Who's the guy you listened to the
most? Well, they were the Red Sox guys.
Right.
Just like you.
And
Ned Martin, Ken Coleman,
right.
Sean McDonough. Even though Sean was just a few years ahead of me at Syracuse.
Right.
I'm like, you know, this is one of my – he is my favorite announcer.
He's your favorite announcer right now today.
No question. He's also a great friend.
He's a great guy.
And but my favorite announcer going today is Sean McDonough.
Sean McDonough's the best guy going. You think – that's another thing. I think McDonough is awesome. But I'm going to be critical here, sort of, but maybe I shouldn't be because I think you can understand this, is I'm sensing a little early chemistry issues with he and Gruden a little bit. I think McDonough's been fine. I think he's great. I think he's the best play-by-play guy there is. But it seems odd. And maybe that's because I'm so used to hearing Tirico with Gruden. Maybe it's not even actually the case.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's my own listening perspective. Do you get that?
I think that's a work in progress.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's going to work.
So do I.
Because Sean's so damn good.
Right.
And Gruden's outstanding and what he does. It's going to come together. But, you know, I heard some of the same stuff early in the baseball season. You know, these guys are – you know, the humor and this and that.
Well, did you think at the start of the season, you know, Jesus, maybe this is a mistake?
No.
Even like spring training with all the Orsillo shit and all this and all that, did you ever think, you know what, I should just be at ESPN full-time. It's easy. There's no pressure to ESPN, but there's no localized sort of stuff at ESPN. You kind of bounce from town to town and do your job.
The localized stuff does make a difference because you hear it and
it
makes more of an impact in a sense, but... Because I've been on a national stage a long time, and people take shots at national guys too, I thought my skin was pretty tough at that point, and I thought I could get through it. The overriding thing was it's a great job.
Yeah.
It's a great job, and I love being there. So that's what I kept reminding myself in those early days. By the way, I thought in spring training, Jerry and I clicked almost immediately. I was surprised when anybody said anything other than that.
But you know how that goes, though. I mean, people are, you know, that's the way people are. All right, thanks for coming in. I was shocked that you did it. You're the first Nesson personality, by the way.
Really?
To be on the Enough Book. I was told there was a Nesson ban.
No.
Nesson ban. I was told that.
No.
My producer lied to me? Ben Kitchen?
I've never heard that. Well, that might have been true at some
point. I don't
think
Jerry's coming on anytime soon.
But well, I'll talk to him.
You going to talk to Remy?
I'll talk to him and see if you want him on.
Absolutely. I'd love to have Remy on.
Well, I did it.
True.
And this was not painful. There were moments here where, I had to explain some things. But
sure.
I hope that's the case.
Yep.
I hope.
Nope.
Even if you don't regard certain people that at least you look at the profession of play-by-play and doing the job as an honorable one. I hope you do.
Well, I think it's a necessary job, but I would like to see, and it's not going to happen, I know, I'd like to see a little bit of a shift. Not an extreme shift, but a little bit more toward
I don't think you're necessarily wrong about that, and I think you may be mistaken that it's not going to happen.
Okay. And I'll let you go. I know it's just for men time. Here we go. I'm starting to see a couple of grays already.
You're awful.
What do you mean?
I want my hair to come in gray, by the way.
Just to taunt me with it?
Not to taunt you, but because
a little more of a natural look.
I'm going to feel when it does, and it is beginning to.
Yeah.
When it does, I'm going to feel more professorial. I'm going to feel more mature.
Oh, you'll feel better about yourself.
Well, I think people have looked at me as a really young guy for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm not anymore.
Right.
But the hair kind of makes, and by you saying I'm dying my hair when I'm not, that makes it sound like I'm trying to play
Did
tricks.
Did you consider
with
a lawsuit at the time? A libel suit against me?
Consider it.
Good. You should do that. You should do that.
My attorney's outside the door.
All right, Dave. I'll talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks again for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. Actually, you know what? I'm really not thankful at all. You should be thanking me. You get this shit every week, these great podcasts, totally free. Do me a favor. Would you go to iTunes, download it, go to Stitcher, do the same, and leave a rating, leave a review. That's where you can help me out. This podcast is going to be number one again, I guarantee it, and you're going to help me along with the process. So for that, I guess at the end, maybe I will thank you. There's a lot of thank yous going back and forth. Here's the point. Fuck you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.